Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So this is where your reputation has gotten you right now.
Good.
Is that when there's a picture of a player with a very solid leg and ass on display, people tag you.
Good.
People are thinking of
I'm proud to be that guy.
Oh, yeah, baby. That's right. Ahmed Fareed, Chris Sims, Chris Sims Unbutton Podcast. This is where we are experts of legs and butts. And we talk football and everything else. And, yes, of course, Ahmed is famous for his clap it up. What's up, dude?
Clap it up. I'm famous for clap it up. You're famous for looking at other men's legs and asses. So we all have our thing.
We do. We all have our thing. I think your thing's probably a little more acceptable in society than mine. So,
socially.
But regardless, it's cool. It's cool that we've carved out our own little niche in that conversation. It is a very real thing. And it's important to play in football, no doubt. So it's fun to have fun with it. Because I do get a lot of friends, too, that are like, hey, bro, you talk about legs and butt a little too much on the pod, man. I'm starting to worry about you. You know, I get all that kind of crap where I'm like, yeah, shut up. Don't worry about me. Okay. We're fine over here.
You're like, it's 2020. You're getting left in the past here. Hey, Chris, exactly. Where are you? What? I'm here. You're not here.
Well, you became Bobby big time at NBC and you got to film all kinds of things. So the 11 o'clock podcast became 12 o'clock because of you. So I can't, and there's no food at NBC right now. So I couldn't sit there from 9 to now and not eat. Oh, good. Check mix. That's
plenty
great.
Of food.
Very good. Plenty of food. But did you take my mask off my bobblehead? I had a mask on the other day.
I think it fell off. I think we couldn't get it around. So I'm holding, Chris, for the listeners out there, I'm holding the Chris Sims bobblehead, which if Chris does anything to make me mad, I can do whatever I want with the bobblehead because he is not here. But Kristen tried to put a mask on you last week and it didn't cover your nose and we didn't want your bobblehead to be one of those nose out mask people.
No, don't That's be one of those guys. Yeah, don't be one of those nose out. I'm wearing my mask, but I'm going to breathe all my nose shit all over you. Oh, thanks. Thanks so much. All right, we got a good one today. We don't have Big
we
Phil.
Do.
All right, so sorry about that. It is my nephew. It's the birthday month in the Sims family. And my sister Deirdre, her little boy Patrick today, it's his birthday. I will be going to New Jersey after this podcast to go do that NBA theme birthday today. I got to wear an NBA jersey. I don't know what I'm going to do yet.
Do you have an NBA jersey?
I don't. And I'm like, just realized it. So I don't know what the hell I'm going to do here. My little boy has two of them and I'm honestly thinking about squeezing into one of them. I'm going to give it a little test later.
Who would that be? Do you know who they are?
He's got a LeBron Lakers jersey in yellow, and then he has a Kyrie Irving Celtics jersey.
Ooh.
I know, and I just don't like that. You know, I like Kyrie Irving. I like the Celtics, but it's like I want somebody that's on a real team right now or a living legend, like a Magic Johnson or something like that, where, he's carved out his own name within that franchise. You got any basketball jerseys?
I got the Joe Dumars jersey back at home. I've had on display in the background of the pod a couple of times. But I think
that's it.
My aunt grew up in Chicago. They were huge Bulls fans. She, at one point, bought me a Bulls jersey and a Michael Jordan jersey. I could never wear it. As a Detroit Pistons fan,
not in Detroit.
I was like, no, you can't. It's like he's a legend. I get it and all that stuff. And during Last Dance, everyone was raving, oh, Michael Jordan, oh, what a great competitor, and the Bad Boys were a bunch of poor sports. I did not like that entire conversation. But yeah, Joe Dumars is my jersey there.
Yeah, he's awesome. Joe D. All right, so let's get into it. What do you want to talk about?
Let's do it. So let's start with this. So yeah, we got a whole bunch of things. We're going to talk about the rookies that have popped for you. And we were wondering, like, how are we going to know which rookies are standing out without preseason games? And we already kind of have seen how we're going to find out. It's like on Twitter, the teams themselves are pushing out some of this video. And then you have reporters that are pushing out this video. So I'm pleasantly surprised, Chris, with the amount of information that we're getting from practice so far. Correct me if I'm wrong there.
No, I'm with you. You know, honestly, I wish they would supply us with a little more, even more videos and things like that. You know, I know they will, and it's been great. I'm not trying to like criticize, but more just being like, I think it'd be good for the NFL brand right now. You know, people are still starving for anything live, real, right now, whatever that is. And, you know, the big thing, like, especially for our business and my business, especially here, is, you know, there's no preseason football. So, you know, this time of the week, we could still be talking about last week's preseason games and certain plays and things and players we saw, to where that drives the conversation. And it's a little thin right now, but thanks to the teams, like you saying, we're surviving.
So we'll get to the rookies that have popped for you so far, the ones that you have seen. We'll get to some reaction to your quarterback school, the Chris Sims quarterback school, where you broke down the John Gruden play and made me look like an idiot by having me recite the play. That was supposed to be just all you. You're the one that's supposed to look like an idiot on that play, not me. You roped me into it, too.
Yeah, very good. Difficult. You deserved it. I've been looking like an idiot for 15 years, so it's your turn.
And we're going to end the pod too, Chris, with we had the homies out there give suggestions. Pete took a picture of the desk here at Central Park with all the bobbleheads and say which one's missing. He wants to know which one we should get next. So a lot of suggestions out there. We'll do that a little bit later on. But let's start with the injuries, Chris, because I think this is a theme that you and Mike have talked about quite a bit on PFT. It's like, how are players going to come into camp? Are they going to be able to withstand the first few days of hitting? And for some players, they've not been able to do that. Three of the big names that I'm seeing out there, Miles Sanders, he's week to week with a lower body injury. You got Chase Young with a hip flexor, and the Jets with Denzel Mims, who we'll get into a little bit later. But you are seeing some injuries. I don't know if it's more than other years, but it has the potential to be.
I think so. And then, we have other injuries where we held this guy out for precaution, things like that. You know, we're just getting going here, and you're seeing – the type of injuries where, a Miles Sanders, a Denzel Mims, guys that are going to be, counted on by their teams this year, to where, they're going to be behind the eight ball, especially the rookies. I mean, you're already behind, and now you're going to miss more time. But this was, like, my number one concern from the start when we started this conversation, whenever that was, April, May, about when guys would get in there. Player safety was a huge issue. First off, when guys are in tip-top shape in the NFL, you're still going to have injuries in a training camp to start it off at some point. But this is going to be a different year. And I don't know, one, I'm expecting enormous amount of injuries for the first week of real football, regular season football. I mean, we're talking about right now guys getting hurt, and we haven't even really got into, full contact practices, no preseason game yet. This is the time of year we start to have these type of injuries, but guys have already played a preseason game or maybe two preseason games as of tonight and things like that. But here's the big thing, Ahmed. The off-season training is critical for so many players. And I know a lot of people out there just go, okay, great. I mean, these guys are pros. Why don't they just train on their own and do that? Yeah, they do. But you can't do it to the level, the intensity you can with a strength coach, yelling at you. Competition next to you, right? That's going to raise your intensity. I mean, if you're Bradley Chubb and you're next to Von Miller, you're going, I want to stay with Von Miller. He's really good. I'm going to measure myself against him. There's that aspect. And then the football weight training staff, they know how to specifically start training for football. And that's where I think players miss out. So, we might have lots of players who ran gassers and have been lifting weights and doing things like that, right? But the difference is in the normal offseason, you start to really challenge yourself with weights and, you know, certain exercises to where you might start off doing a lot of reps to get in shape. And then at the end of OTAs, you're starting to do like max reps or two or three reps of high weight to really get that explosiveness about you and be built that way. Let alone you start to do specific football running drills, Ahmed, instead of just running wind sprints all the time. Now you're running, hey, today the workout is we want you to push this big sled, you know, up and back down the field 10 times. Well, that's football conducive. Oh, we want you to pull this sled with some weights on it. We're going to put a harness on you today. And that's why I think you see these injuries right now. A lot of these guys are in shape, yeah, for the normal Joe. But are you in shape for if you're a receiver and somebody's jamming you and pushing on you while you're trying to get off the line of scrimmage and run as fast as you can? Those are the things that I think are going to continue to bother people. And that's why I think we'll continue to see injuries throughout this process until week one.
And now you got to be kind of careful because with Denzel Mims, they're talking about him. I mean, his whole mode is to be a fast guy. And so with a hamstring injury, they're going to take their time and he's going to miss some time. He's going to miss perhaps the rest of training camp here. Chase Young, kind of the same thing. Maybe they're being a little more careful than they need to with him with a hip flexor. But still, that's missing valuable time for one
they
of these
need him.
Young players. Yeah. But yeah. Here's the flip side of that, Chris. Here's the flip side.
Right.
What if this is also an opportunity, an optimistic view of it, that you can reevaluate all these things that you have done in every training camp that you thought up until this point, you go, this is super crucial. This is vital that we do this. And now in 2020, like so many other things, we're like, okay, maybe we can rethink how we do training camp. And it wasn't as important to do this. If players are getting hurt, you're not going to think that. But maybe there are some players that will figure out ways or teams that will figure out ways that can improve upon what we've done every other year in the past.
I think that you're right. We might have some good that comes out of this. Hey, some guys that might not have gotten a chance to prove what their worth is on the field, maybe they get a chance. But, you know, this is where it's really, you know, to be NFL game ready, that's where I don't know if that can happen a little bit because of what you're saying, though. You know, you also have to think most of these coaches right now, you know, they're going, man, I got to get my guys ready for week one. We got no preseason. I want to make sure we stay healthy. So, yeah, they want to hit and do some tackling and all that. But I don't know if they're going to do it enough to sacrifice their players and deal with that, you know, constant stress of, oh, man, we're going to have a full scrimmage today. I'm going to let guys tackle to the ground. Do I really want to do this with my starting players and some of these guys? And I think more times than not, I think they're going to be reluctant to do it because of this year, because they're going to want their team formed and ready to go for week one. But ultimately, I think because of that, it's also going to lead to more injuries. It is.
Yeah.
It's just a simple fact of the matter. And that's where, you know, I know we had a lot of injuries the year we didn't have the CBA, right? And that was the 2012 season. There was injuries were up like 25% to 30%, something like that. I think this year we're going to blow that out of the water because at least in that year, Florio made the point, and I think he's spot on, you know, guys could still go work with their personal trainers, have training regimens that way, do all of that stuff. You know, this year you were on Zoom or you were trying to do it by yourself. And it's just different from that standpoint. And also in that year, you got to play some preseason games and get yourself physically conditioned for the physical elements of the game. And I think it's just going to be a shock. Like some things that I think about with week one, high injuries, I expect that to happen. And I expect the offensive lines in the NFL to struggle. Like I wouldn't be shocked if you saw week one, we saw some record high numbers and quarterback sacks because
the communication's not there. They just don't know where each other's going to be. Is that it?
Exactly. All of that. And it's going to be impossible without a real preseason game to really replicate the intensity of a football game. And that's where I think the offensive linemen are going to be like, wait, we've been good in practice, right?
Right.
Yeah, but Von Miller and Bradley Chubb haven't really been going pedal to the metal 100%. You know what I'm saying? Aaron Donald, it's been practice. It's been like 90%, 85%. Now they're going to get into a game and be like fucking crazed animals, you know, like LT crazed dogs and have some fun. Yeah. By the way, that was a preseason game against the Jets, just so you know, he's saying that like a psycho, right? So I think that, and you know my theory with defensive linemen are bulls and offensive linemen are cows, yeah, a little more docile by nature, and I think it's going to catch them off guard big time early in the year.
So if that's the case, then quarterbacks could be rattled week one, week two. There's one quarterback that's already been a little bit rattled, Chris, and that is Jarrett Stidham with the New England Patriots. There's some video out there of him throwing, I think it was three interceptions in a practice. And the Tua squad, very vocal on Twitter now, ever since you ranked Tua behind Jarrett Stidham in your top 40 quarterback rankings, very vocal. And so they made sure that you noticed that Jarrett Stidham threw those interceptions. What do you make of that story out there and Jarrett throwing to the wrong team, which I guess was his team, but on the defensive side?
Yeah, still the wrong team for this purpose. Again, do I pay attention to it? Do I take notice of it? Do I file it away and go, wait, is this going to be a continued theme here throughout training camp with Jarrett Stidham? Certainly, I'll be aware of it. There's no doubt about it. And I believe today he threw another interception. So he's like, you know, he had three interceptions, and I think for 3 days in a row, he's thrown an interception, right? Now, you know, one, it's like hashtag as expected. I mean, the guy's basically a rookie in the NFL. So, yeah, he's not going to be perfect. You know, two, as you know, they got some new parts at wide receiver. They got some young guys who are still learning their way. And three, they're going against the best secondary in football. You know, I mean, that's all there is to be said. They're going against some special guys. They're outclassed as far as that's concerned. I mean, their defensive secondary should win the battle more days than not against the wide receivers. So, and then also, Ahmed, you always have to take this into account. I got a few more points with this, but like, yeah, you know, the context of the interceptions matter too, right? You know, if he's throwing a ball and it's getting batted at the line of scrimmage because the right guard got pushed back 5 feet, well, that's not Jarrett Stidham's fault. Let's not just go, oh, he threw an interception and just, you know, put it on Twitter so everybody can react. You know, if he threw a ball and the receiver broke the wrong way, he was supposed to go left, but he went right. You know, Jarrett Stidham's going to get blamed. You know, so yeah, there's a lot of different ways into how to view these interceptions, let alone New England is the type of place where they might have a theme for the day where Bill and Josh McDaniels go, we want
to
be aggressive.
Throw it to the other team. Throw it to the other team. That's
I
want to
test
one.
Maybe. Well, I'm not even like he might go, I want our corners tested here early on in camp. I want to test them. I don't want any like, you know, check the ball down. I want our corners tested because I want our wide receivers tested. And I want to see what they have too and being able to compete with some of these guys. So yeah, he might have told his quarterbacks, hey, push the envelope a little bit. Throw the ball down the field. I mean, I experienced it when I was there for that 2012 season. I mean, we had some practices where Brady was, you know, less than Brady-like, right? Because they were beating it in his brain. Throw it deep. Throw it deep. I don't give a shit that Wes Welker's open for 4 yards right here. We need to practice this. This is what we're bad at. I know you can hit Wes Welker 4 yards over the middle. And it led to some practices where you went, eh, that's not that great. So there's that aspect, too, that people can't forget. There might have been something that's been told. And then the last thing here and the most important point, and I'm sorry I'm talking so much because you're probably the fuck? Will this guy shut up?
It's interesting.
Is
that's what this whole podcast is, Chris. This is the whole point of the podcast, is to get inside your brain for as long as possible, for an hour if necessary.
Good.
So that's,
well,
that's the whole concept of this.
And then I don't let you butt in or ask me a question, so I don't want to, like, just totally go crazy here. But,
we're
like,
good.
The most important thing, and this is where I admire the New England Patriots, they do not script for success, okay? And a lot of people out there might go, what the hell does that mean, script for success? Well, have you heard me say this before? Have you heard this?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think that's a phrase that I've heard.
Okay, so – script for success. When I was in Tampa, Derek Brooks used to complain about it all the time because basically before practice, John Gruden would get together with Monty Kiffin and he'd go, okay, here's 7-on-7. here's the plays I'm going to run, Monty Kiffin. I need you to play this coverage versus this play. I need you to play this coverage versus this play, right? So a lot of the times, you know, the defense is just working on their coverages and things like that, so they don't care as much, even though yeah. the defensive coordinator might go, I would never play this defense versus this formation, or if you had Joey Galloway in the slot, right? They wouldn't do it, but they're being forced to because Gruden's asking them to, and they want their offense to click and get some timing and some rhythm and get some success to practice, right? More teams than not run practice that way. The New England Patriots don't. They don't do any of that. And therefore, it can be very game-like at times where the quarterback could get to the line of scrimmage and be like, man, I know it's like day five of training camp, but I'm not sure what the hell they're lining up here or what the coverage is. But it makes you have to play the game, right? Because that's the way it'll sure. be on a Sunday. So it can lead to some ugly practices, especially if the defense is a little more advanced than the offense, which I think is the case there in New England. So I'm not going to make a big deal about it at this point. Jared Stidham's still learning. They've got a lot of young, new pieces on that offensive side of the ball. If we're still talking about this a week from now, 10 days from now, Ahmed, and it's, man, Jared Stidham, he's thrown interceptions, you know, 7 out of the last 9 days. And,
right.
you know, it's then I'm going to start to go, damn, okay, he's having some issues being a little reckless with the football and reading defenses and things like that.
I'm going to say Bill's still telling him to push the envelope out there. He's telling him to throw those interceptions. But, no, that's a good point, and that's something that I don't think we normally think about. We think of a practice as like, yeah, you just want to emulate everything like a game. But that's the point of a practice, is trying things out that you may not try in a game, or that you want to improve
sure.
in a game.
Right.
And I think that's a good point. And it's always a good strategy for Jarrett Stidham to start low. You always want to start like with a C or a D. You don't want to start out practice great, especially week one here with full pads on. So some things to work on there for Jarrett Stidham, but that may be exactly what he's doing, working on him in training camp right now. And if you look at the video, Chris, there's some things that Dwayne Haskins needs to work on. It's kind of unfair. I feel like there's a video out there of Alex Smith right next to Dwayne Haskins, and Alex
yeah.
Smith is pinpoint precision, and Dwayne Haskins is overthrowing some guys. Did you see that video out there?
Of course I did. You know, that's like, you know, for lack of a better way to say it, that's the shit I don't like about social media right now. A cherry-picked play to start, you know, start some controversy or some bullshit on the media, you know, on social media. And then, you know, that's not right. And it's routes versus air right there.
Yeah.
Okay. And the play you're talking about. And basically, you know, and I'll try to explain it. Dwayne Haskins is on the right. Alex Smith is on the left. You know, Dwayne Haskins is throwing like a deep out to the right, or maybe a deep crosser, and Alex Smith is throwing a deep in cut to his left. Alex Smith throws a strike. Dwayne Haskins throws a ball, you know, a little high over the guy's head. And now people try to go, oh, yeah, Alex Smith looks sharp. Dwayne Haskins doesn't look good. You know, no, we don't know that to be the case. And we don't know yeah. if the guy ran the right route out there for Dwayne Haskins or anything like that. And, you know, again, it's routes versus air. You're going to miss some every now and then. Let's wait till they start getting into some live bullets, and let's see if that's the case then. You know, the one thing I'm not worried about with Dwayne Haskins is him throwing the football. That's like the least of my concerns. So when I see something like that, I go, okay, he missed it. I don't care. I've seen enough of that type of throw to know he can hit the bullseye plenty of times. So,
yeah.
You know, again, yeah, that's I just don't like that aspect of it, I guess.
It's a funny situation because I'm really interested to see what both quarterbacks there could do if given the starting role. It's not like one of those situations where I think a lot of people are rooting for one over the other. I think I'm just as excited to see what Dwayne Haskins can do as a starter in year two as what Alex Smith can do coming back after 2 years out.
I mean, me too. You're right. There's excitement there. I would love to see what Alex Smith can bring to the table. You know, I talked about this with Florio on Monday a little bit. Like, you know, Washington needs to figure out how they want to frame their team. If I'm Washington, I'm going with Dwayne Haskins. They got some young weapons. They got some young weapons on defense.
Yeah.
They could mold something special here. They really can. And, you know, not that we know yet, but when I thought about this more and more, because we know Alex Smith is a little bit of a game manager, right? That's what he's always had, a little bit of a, you know, that's been his MO. People always 100%. Thought that's what he is. And I would agree. I mean, you've heard me say and call him Charlie Checkdown and all those type of things. You know, and so I've heard some people go, well, if they need a game manager and, you know, they want to play defense and that kind of football, maybe they should go with Alex Smith. But my rebuttal to that would be, no, I think just the opposite. Like, if you're going to play defense and control the ball and, like, want to play that style of football, Dwayne Haskins is capable of that. You need to beat in his brain, like, don't turn the ball over, don't take chances. But he kind of played that way at Ohio State. You know, they max protected. They ran the ball with J.K. Dobbins. They would send two or three guys out for a route, and he would try to make a big throw or something like that. I think he's perfectly capable of playing that style of football, let alone a team that doesn't have a lot of big weapons. Like, Alex Smith is not the kind of guy that's going to take advantage of Terry McLaurin running 70-yard post down the middle. He's not. Dwayne Haskins is going to capitalize on that stuff, let alone he's played with him in college already. So to me, the more I thought about it, I went, wait, the Redskins look like they're a defense. You know, let's kind of manage the game on offense and maybe take a few shots downfield in a pass game from time to time. That's Dwayne Haskins. You start him all the way. Listen, if you want to get into five wides and spread the field, and now you want to get into like, oh, we need a quarterback that can make a lot of decisions and do things in the line of scrimmage, then fine, go to Alex Smith then maybe. But I think people have it a little backwards where they're thinking, oh, the Redskins might want a game manager. No, I think they're, if that's the case, I think Dwayne Haskins is capable of being that type of guy too. You just, you're going to have to take some of the power out of his hands and manage the game as coaches, but that's still very possible. I mean, we've seen plenty of teams do it that way.
For sure. I want to get to the rookies that have popped for you here in just a second, but Philip Rivers in Indianapolis, another guy to watch, another veteran on a different team coming back. What is this that Pete has in your flatten it,
dadgummit? Yeah,
dadgummit.
Flatten it, dadgummit. You know, flatten it, dadgummit. You know, because he's what he's got. Well, this is I love Philip Rivers. I really do. Yeah. His intensity, you can see. You know, like a Brady.
Who swears less, me or Philip Rivers?
Oh, well, at least he does fake swears. You know, like dadgummit. You don't even do that. You know, so he has words for his swear words. You don't even like flirt with those words. So
I can do that. I can think of some here. Let me write a couple. Okay, I'm gonna think. I'm gonna brainstorm.
He'll be like, "Gosh, jolly gee," or he'll say some of the funniest stuff. He'll be like, "That's hilarious." Yeah. Coming out
and he's brought that to Indianapolis now. He's bringing that over to the Colts.
He is. And you know what? Like, I love little nuances like that. You know, when he's saying flatten it out, you know, he's throwing a crosser over the middle, whether that's like a 12 yard and straight across, or even like what we would call a crossing route where maybe you inside release, you push up the field, and then you cross over that way. You know, what he's saying, and again, these are the details that the old great quarterbacks have. We're hearing Brady talk to the receivers like this in Tampa the same way. Because these little nuances are the difference between a pass being for a 50-yard completion or maybe incomplete, or the guy had to go down to the ground to catch it. You know, there. And here's what I mean by the flatten it, okay? So he's probably got this crossing route. And if the guy continues to go on a, you know, as he's crossing the field, an upward angle, right? Like, let's just say, like, he's going across that way, okay? Right. You see my hands doing that? That lets the DB maybe undercut the wide receiver. So if Rivers deemed like, oh, wait, my guy's got him beat, okay? Now I'm going to try to throw him, you know, a laser into his chest, right? Well, if the guy's going away from the ball, he's leaving the target, right? He's going to take a little power away from the ball itself. Right. But he's also leaving area for that DB to undercut it. Let alone how many times a year I see that type of throw, and we might watch it on TV and go, oh, damn, I can't believe the quarterback threw that low there. If he doesn't throw that low, that's going to be a 50-yard gain. And then I'll watch the film on Monday and go, well, the damn receiver didn't flatten it out. Right. So now a ball he caught at his, you know, his toenails, if he had flattened it out, he would have caught it right in his belly button and kept running. And there's a handful of plays every year from every team where stuff like that happens. And that's the difference between a great offense and executing and staying on the field and third down and all those type of things. And I think those are the things he'll bring to the table for that young receiving core they got there too.
Sure, and it's these little things that I'm glad are out there that gives us stuff to talk about and analyze with Phillip Rivers in a new place, because we're not going to get to see him play in preseason games.
We should do that at the board, maybe, like the flattening of the route, show people what they mean by that, right?
For sure.
That would be a
for
good
sure.
one.
We learned about that because we saw it on social media. You know who else is perusing social media out there? Some defenders. Stephon Gilmore is saying, thanks for showing me the routes teams work on, LOL. So he is taking a look at some of these receivers running their routes, running their plays, and trying to formulate a game plan against them. How much do you think he's really able to do that? And are there edges to be had for teams that look at other teams' social media accounts?
Well, yeah, I mean, a little bit. You know, I don't think it's going to be something they're going to bring up like in the film room all the time. But like a guy like Stephon Gilmore or Richard Sherman, or like, you know, some of the corners in the world who are really into the nuances of the game, that are not only watching, you know, the body signals as far as a route, but also watching the quarterbacks drop and, oh, he does this when he drops this much and all those. Stephon Gilmore, he's probably going to look at some of those and go, oh, wait, Tyreek Hill runs a post corner. Yeah, notice he likes to take this little extra step or whatever it may be. I don't think it's a game changer, but, yeah, the students of the game will try to steal from anything. I mean, as you know, I'm not even playing anymore, and I'm still looking at crazy crap like, ooh, did you see that? That's an interesting angle, and it has no bearing on my life at all. So the ones that really love the sport are going to steal, you know, some of those type of things to, you know, gain a little knowledge or advantage or whatever that may be.
Well, I could definitely see how a cornerback – would find useful how a wide receiver gets off the line of scrimmage, how they use their hands, just stuff like that. I can see being super useful.
Definitely. Like even, you know, certain receivers have telltale signs about when they're going to make a break. They might lean their head, you know, they might start dropping their hips too low, too early. You know, they start getting choppy feet, and, you know, you get to see anything enough times. And especially a guy like Gilmore, who's probably been taught some things by Belichick that he never knew until he got there, to where he sees nuances that I'm sure probably a lot of DBs in football don't, because he's being coached better than any DB in football with Belichick, who's an expert in that area.
Sure. All right. You want to do your rookies that have popped so far? Can we talk about them?
Yeah.
We're going to do this in the damn okay section here. I don't think we have the song. We don't have the capabilities here on the streaming platform, Chris.
Okay.
Damn. Okay. not as good. Not as good as the actual song.
Not.
So let's start with a guy that we showed last week because he has amazing legs and ass, and that is A.J. Dillon for the Packers. He just keeps popping up on the internet. Mostly because of that, the lower half is so solid. But what have you seen even more recently from the video for A.J. Dillon?
Well, like, I think what you're, you know, first off, yeah, his size pops off to you, to me, to everybody. I mean,
yes,
you're hearing all the Green Bay players. I mean, they're all joking about it, laughing about it. But the thing that I think is going to impress, and just even what I've seen a little, he's a very smooth athlete. And I know that, too, because I saw him in person with Boston College and Notre Dame. You know, for a big guy, he's got very good body control. You know, not that he's like ultra quick with movements as far as like breaking ankles, but can change direction very smoothly. I mean, there's just a gracefulness in which he can do that and, you know, get his body going one way to where, you know, again, I think everybody's excited about him just because of the compliment he is to Aaron Jones, and they haven't had anything like that as far as that type of power running back up there. You know, I don't know, since Najee Davenport, that might be the last running back they had of this kind of caliber.
Yeah, and helping the offense, anything they can do to help Aaron Rodgers, make him feel a lot better after they drafted a quarterback to replace him would be a good idea. So A.J. Dillon's a guy that you liked watching him at Boston College. I know you really liked Cam Akers. And the Rams have a couple that are really interesting to me because you really liked Van Jefferson, who didn't get a whole lot of hype out there because I think a lot of people didn't think his ceiling was that high. But so far in practice, there have been rave reviews about Van Jefferson. And for Cam Akers, I'm reading this thing that Jalen Ramsey said. He goes, I missed the chance to play with Cam Akers at FSU, but he is easily becoming one of my favorite teammates already. So those are two for the Rams that, at least so far, look pretty good.
Well, you know, I know we talked on Monday. I believe that was Monday when we talked about Cam Paddles. And I know I said I think Cam Akers will be the guy. You know,
yes.
Yeah, I got a cheat sheet, too. I saw Cam Akers in person 2 years ago. He's an NFL stud. I knew that when he was on the field at Notre Dame. I kept going, damn, this guy, you know, he's gonna be a 1,000-yard rusher in the league at some point. He's built like an NFL stud, and he has, like, special explosion to the hole and through the hole. So I think he'll be the guy because of, like, again, what we talked about, too, with that zone scheme running. Remember when I got up on Monday and you couldn't see my head and that side? Like, that fits,
yes.
Cam Akers. Oh, you want me to stretch it out, coach? And then when I see a lane, you want me just to put my foot in the ground and run like a bat out of hell through it? He's made to do that. That's what he did at Florida State. So I expect big things from him. And then Van Jefferson was one of the great early round picks of the draft. Man, yeah, you lose Brandon Cooks, but man, it takes the edge off the fact that you have Van Jefferson. Van Jefferson, I know we talked about this a little during the draft process, is as polished, the most polished wide receiver I've seen come out of college football. I mean, he's in that discussion. His dad is an NFL coach for the New York Jets. Mm-hmm. He ran routes better than anybody I saw in college football. I mean, it was high-level route running, you know, as far as what they asked him to do, the techniques in which he did it, and then he's physically gifted to stick his foot right in the ground and explode out of the cut and do those things. You know,
in a weird way, some teams probably saw that as a negative, though, Chris.
Probably.
Because they thought, he doesn't have a whole lot of room to grow. He already is what he is.
Right.
And that's not good enough.
Well, you're right. There are. Like, Seattle probably would go, that's not our kind of guy, as we've talked about. But
yeah.
New Orleans, the Rams, the teams that know how to utilize the slot receiver to its truest form, they love that shit. Because those are two coaches who will be like, well, I know how to devise 6 and 7 yard completions all day long. If my guy here is just smart and can run a good route, we'll never have him covered. And that's what's really cool about the Rams, because they really have three of those guys. So, you know, I love that aspect of an offense when you have three guys that are interchangeable, that can kind of do everything, you know, maybe not overly great at one thing, but really good at all things. That can lead to a very dangerous offense. And I think he's going to fit their scheme very well. And because he's so polished and NFL game ready and everything like that, I think he'll have a big part of that offense, you know, early on in the year.
So the Rams may have hit on a couple there with Akers and Jefferson. It seems like you've learned a lot about these players by watching them in college cover Notre Dame, including this next guy. And Joe Hayden is learning what you have learned about Chase Claypool. He tweeted out, he's going to be a problem. You heard it from me first. We didn't hear it from you first, because we heard it from Chris Sims first, who said that Chase Claypool is going to be a problem, but he is looking good in practice so far, apparently.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know I sound like, you know, a recording, but I'm just going to say this one more time. Very few people I've ever seen at the wide receiver position look and have the physical attributes and have the physical ability that Chase Claypool has. I mean, it's special. You know, I've been covering Notre Dame for 3 years. I haven't seen one receiver on the field in Chase Claypool's class since I've been covering Notre Dame for 3 years. They've been playing a lot of damn good teams still, just so everybody knows out there. So the guy, you know, I know you've heard me say before, like, he's built like Brandon Marshall. That's what he's built like. Except he's faster and more explosive than Brandon Marshall, which is scary. He has superstar potential. You know, he could be this year's DK Metcalf and maybe even more because, you know, Pittsburgh does have a Juju Smith-Schuster, and Big Ben is one of the great deep ball throwers. And I think Pittsburgh's offense is a little more creative than Seattle's altogether. But I'm not shocked to hear about this. And I heard about this a little already. I had heard inklings out of Rams camp. You know, I've heard inklings just from a few people I trust in Pittsburgh that, you know, they know I like Chase Claypool, and they, oh, your boy's killing it out here. You know, I've gotten a little bit of that. So I'm not surprised. And I think really if Pittsburgh which I think, like, we do, like, you know, best case, worst case for teams during PFT. You know, my best case was, like, Pittsburgh could be in the Super Bowl. I don't think that's crazy. You know, their defense is a Super Bowl defense. Big Ben's healthy. And, of course, the big thing will be a guy like Chase Claypool or one of these young receivers in a James Washington or Deontay Johnson is going to have to significantly jump on the scene to help out their offense. And I expect it to be Chase Claypool. I expect him to be the go-to big-time playmaker receiver for the offense.
He was the 11th wide receiver taken in the draft. He was second round, 49th overall pick. So what are other people seeing that you don't believe is true with Claypool? Why was he down?
Yeah, well, I think people were down because of, like, production, right? All right?
Sure.
You know, last year was his only real year of production, and it was a good year. But it'd be one of those things where I push back a lot, too, and go, wait, have you really dug into the film? Because if you're just looking at his receptions and just doing that, yeah, you're going to go, man, I like this. What you need to do is look at all his routes, because if he had a quarterback in Notre Dame that was a little more aggressive and threw the ball down the field, they left 500-600 yards on the field this year. I mean, I almost said it every week during Notre Dame. You know, be more aggressive, Ian Book, because Chase Claypool was open a whole lot more than what he got the ball. But I think it is the 1 year of production, got in the doghouse a little at Notre Dame a little bit. You know, and what I even tried to tell a few friends in the NFL, because I had started having people towards the end of the draft process start to ask me about Chase Claypool. Like, hey, dude, you know, you might be onto something with this Chase Claypool. We just kind of did a deeper dive into it. And, you know, you might be right what you said about him 3, 4, 5 weeks ago. And, you know, it's always good to hear those things. But. Yeah. You know, I
you go,
think
why did you
little...
doubt me at all? Why wouldn't I have been right?
Well, that's they probably have reasons obviously. To doubt me at some point. But I think the rawness, getting in the doghouse, only 1 year of being the go-to guy in the pass game, you know, that let he's from Canada. That led people to be like, oh, I don't know. And that's what I told a lot of my friends in the NFL. I said, this is a good kid. He's from Canada. He was a little bit of a culture shock, I think, when he first got to Notre Dame and trying to find his way in the world. And I also told them, like, he got in the doghouse, but the doghouse for Notre Dame is, like, it's a different – they put people in the doghouse at Notre Dame where nobody even would have said something to us in Texas. I mean, they would have been like, oh, just a normal day, huh? And I'm like, yeah. So there's a different rule of strictness there. I mean, you know, Notre Dame, they're strict as hell. You miss, like, a class, you can miss practice. You can't practice today. You missed a class. You know, no.
Where some other schools, you go to a class, they're like, wow, you really didn't need to do that. It could take away from your football.
Oh, exactly. That's the schedule I was on. Sorry, but that's the schedule. School, what? I need to go watch film, and I have a football game this weekend. Yeah. School can wait till the winter.
Prioritize, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry to say that, but that's just the truth of the matter.
No, it makes sense. So he was the 11th wide receiver taken. The number one wide receiver taken was from the Raiders at 12, Henry Ruggs III. And everything you keep seeing on Twitter, Instagram, social media out there is this dude is fast, and John Gruden's going to enjoy using him quite a bit.
Yes. I mean, Gruden's got a million plays to get a guy like this off, and that's the phrase Gruden would use, like, you say this guy run, I got to get him off. It's my job to get him off. He does. He'll have a lot of ways. Yeah.
Does anyone tell him that might could be perceived differently?
Different ways? Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Why? Where was your mind going? Get your mind out of the gutter.
I'm just saying, like, he's saying that. It's just like if people could go with it. I don't know.
Yeah, getting him off football-wise, which means lots of yards and touchdowns. Yes, that's getting correct. Off in the football world, right?
Yes, I figured that.
You know, and – you know, yeah, seeing all the things you're seeing on social media, you know, have texted with a few people from the Raiders, like, he's killing it there. They're excited about what they got. They love the football player. And, you know, again, I think Gruden, knowing him and how much he wanted this type of guy, he is going to have, like, a special place on his play sheet that is going to be, you know, Henry Ruggs plays. Whether that's throwing deep posts, wide receiver screens, you know, the reverses, the speed sweeps, all of that, he is going to have his own special category just for that guy, because I think he thinks he's going to be a special part of that offense and obviously can do some things that, you know, nobody else on their team can do with that speed.
Yeah. There, it's going to be so interesting to see this whole rookie wide receiver class, because we've talked it up so much and how deep it is, and it might be the deepest one with some high-end talent. It's going to be interesting to see how they produce year number one. Let me throw another one at you. KJ Hamler with the Broncos, and he's already getting some praise from AJ Bouye, right? It's Bouye.
Yeah, right.
Correct? Where's the quote? Here's the quote. Being in the league for a while, I've seen a lot of rookie receivers come in. It seems like they don't have it figured out. He said, you look at those two, that's Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler, and you can tell whether it's the offseason coaching they've had outside, they're real polished in routes, especially Jeudy. He never gives you the same look every time. I'm loving going against him. He's going to keep me true to my technique. And so praise from the defensive backs in Denver so far for both those receivers, including KJ Hamler.
Yeah, well, Judy's a slick route runner. We talked about that a lot, you know, during the process. I mean, he is. Like a Van Jefferson, they were pros, you know, their last year in college. Like, great route running pros in college. It's very rare to have that. So Jeudy, yes, he understands the how to set up a DB, how to give him the different looks, you know, how to make him, hey, I did this three times in a row, I'm going to do it again, but this time I'm going to throw a curveball and go somewhere else. You know, he understands the psychological part of playing receiver and setting up DBs, which is very impressive. And Hamler, not the route runner, but just the explosive nightmare. And I have no inside info on him yet or anything like that to where I could just say, oh, yeah, I'm hearing that out of Denver. But you know how much I liked him in the draft. You know, the only reason I don't think he was a first rounder is he had drops, which, you know, again, where I want to say, like, I know drops, it's a wide receiver and they're supposed to catch the ball. But when you have a guy that's playing quarterback who is very inconsistent with the timing of the throws, and you're open five plays in a row and he doesn't throw to you, and then you're covered for four plays in a row and he does throw to you, and then when he does throw to you, he's throwing wobbling knuckleballs at you and things like that, it all messes with the psyche of a wide receiver, you know? Mm-hmm. So I know his hands were a little bit less than coming out. I get that. But I do attribute it a little bit to the offense and the quarterback he's with. You know, I saw enough high-level catches to where I went, this guy doesn't have bad hands. This is just like a concentration issue or keeping him in a rhythm of the game. But, you know, I would just be shocked if he doesn't have a big role on this offense. Not to say he's going to, like, lead the team in receiving, but I think he's going to have high average yards per catch, and he's going to be that home run hitter for that offense to where he's taking the top off to get the other guys open.
Could be the reason they win a couple of games out there. Just a couple of huge plays. Definitely. For KJ Hamler. Yeah. Wouldn't put it past him to do that with the speed that he has. How about this for the Bears? They didn't have a whole lot of draft capital, but they used their top pick on Cole Kmet, the tight end out of Notre Dame, another Notre Dame guy that you've spent a lot of time watching. Here's a quote from their tight ends coach in Chicago. Said, I would say Cole is on schedule, if maybe not a tick ahead of schedule. Not to make it sound too grand, but I have zero concerns about Cole Kmet. I really do. So it seems like what they've seen so far from Cole Kmet in Chicago, they really, really like.
Well, he's a hell of a player, a hell of a specimen. And then, you know, added to that, he's coming from a school that, hey, their offensive linemen and their tight ends, they're coached like pros. They are. I mean, Notre Dame's run game is, you know, a lot more advanced than most college teams that I've covered over the years and compared to Notre Dame. They do a lot of stuff, and he's a really good run blocker, and I think they're going to try to make him their Travis Kelce or George Kittle or whatever it may be. But Matt Nagy, of course, runs that Kansas City Andy Reid offense to where I think Cole Kmet, you know, people are sleeping on him. If you want to give me fantasy, if you want a fantasy advice from me or somebody like that, especially if Nick Foles plays, I think he's going to find Cole Kmet to be a very quarterback-friendly target, you know, down the middle of the field. And I think he's going to open up a lot of eyes this year in Chicago.
Okay, here's the counter to that. Pete makes a good point. He might be impactful, but he wonders, is tight end the toughest offensive position to make an impact as a rookie? Even Gronk had 543 yards as a rookie. Jimmy Graham had 356 yards as a rookie. And he threw a pop quiz at you here. You ready?
Yeah.
Who is the only rookie tight end in NFL history to get 1,000 receiving yards? There's only been one. I didn't know
only that. One rookie tight end ever to get 1,000 receiving yards. Is it – let me just say that – let me ask this. Is it past 1980 or before 1980?
Pre-1980. I'll give you the year. 1961.
Damn.
Any
idea? I mean, is that Mackey from the Colts?
It's not Mackey from the Colts. His name?
Not Ditka?
It is Mike Ditka, 1961.
That's amazing.
He's the only rookie tight end in NFL history to get 1,000 receiving yards. And so it is tight end the toughest position to make a big impact? I mean, does he have a chance to do something? Maybe not 1,000, but get up around 700 yards?
I would think so. You know, the Jimmy Graham factor is going to play into that.
Sure.
You know, as much as I say Notre Dame is, you know, NFL ready and that stuff, the calls he's going to make at the line of scrimmage here with the Chicago Bears and the things he has to read in the pass game, all those are more intricate and detailed than college football ever is. So it is a learning process. And tight end, because you have to learn so much about the run game and then the pass game, you know, there's more on there in their brain than maybe a wide receiver or a DB who's a first or second round pick, right? There's a lot of nuance to the tight end position. That would probably be my reasoning just off the top of my head of why it's hard for those guys to just come in and take over, let alone I feel like it's a position where – the coaches need to see you play for a year, and then they start to realize, oh, wait, we could do this with this guy. And, sure. You know, we should you know, utilize this formation more because it helps the tight end out and all that. But I think Komet's going to have a great deal to do with the success of the Bears, run game, pass game, even in the red zone. I mean, him and Jimmy Graham, they could get in a two tight end set with a fullback or even a three tight end set with a fullback and a tailback, and you think they're in goal line. And then all of a sudden Nick Foles goes, you know, shift. And now one tight end stays in there. They're still in the I form, but now it's Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet on the outside. You could throw a fade to them if it's one-on-one, or maybe you could still run the ball if they're worried about how big they are and they're doubling those guys. So they're gonna pose some matchup issues down there that I think is going to help the Bears out a whole lot too.
So in terms of rookie offensive players, I'm going to move Cole Kmet up my fantasy football cheat sheet just a little bit here.
You should.
Although normally I don't draft Chicago Bears just because of my Detroit Lions allegiance, so maybe I might have to make an exception there. But I'm moving way up another running back or another rookie running back out here, a rookie running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And he has gotten a lot of praise. You've talked about him before the draft. Even before he was drafted by Kansas City, you said the perfect team that could get him is the Kansas City Chiefs, and they got him at the end of the first round. Here's the quote, Chris, from Patrick Mahomes. Clyde has done a great job in the reps that he has gotten. He's playing fast, has incredible vision. That's what's been the biggest thing so far. So he's praising his vision from what he's seen so far in practice.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know we've hit on this. This is the ultimate, you know, perfect player scheme mix. And then the player is – like really freaking good too. You know, I think that's the big thing. And, you know, first off, his vision is off the charts. I mean, off the charts. Never missed a hole, never missed a cutback lane at LSU. You know, he'd be in a mosh pit of guys and stop and reverse and cut this way. And you'd be like, how did he even see that? There's like four guys around him and he's 5'8", you know? So, but to me, I mean, yeah, this is why I said it in the pre-draft process. This is an offense, again, like a McVay, a Sean Payton, you know, Andy Reid. It's the pure West Coast offense. John Gruden, you're going to see this with Jacobs last year. It all comes back to Roger Craig and their ability to use the running back in the pass game. And Andy Reid's about as good as it gets in that department. Let alone we've talked about the formula in which they're, you know, aggressive down the field. Oh, Tyreek, Sammy, defense is running back. Oh, we got to worry about the bomb. Oh, shit. He threw the ball 5 yards underneath the Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now we get a run and tackle and rally against this guy in space. Yeah, good luck with that there, yeah. Okay? So that's where, you know, he's got rookie of the year written all over him. I just – because they're going to win games, and I think he's going to put up a lot of good stats in certain weeks in the run game and pass game alike because their team and their formula and their scheme all fit what he can do best.
Certainly doesn't hurt for him that Damian Williams opted out of the 2020 season, so he will be the guy in the run game, the pass-catching game out of the backfield as well. There, and the Lions' DeAndre Swift reports out of there. He's been uncoverable is what they're saying, the Detroit beat writers, Chris.
I'm not shocked. You know, he's got that, not the Clyde Edwards-Helaire's, you know, a total top ability, but has that ability that's very close to break people's ankles. You know, make people miss, really run sharp, sharp routes out of the backfield. And, you know, I think Kerryon Johnson is going to be the more talented runner there in Detroit, but I think DeAndre Swift will carve out his game as that third down back, that screen back. You know, he's going to get some carries, but I think that more than likely they're going to want to formulate more pass game around him and more run game, you know, around Kerryon Johnson. My big thing here is with this, though, okay, would be Andy Reid has a history and a system that knows how to utilize the running back. Darrell Bevell, on the other hand, I don't know if he does. So that'll be interesting for me to see. That's not been a part of his offense usually, finding ways to throw the ball to the back out of the backfield. And maybe this is Matt Patricia's influence on him going, why wouldn't you? You know, James White had 97 million catches while I coached there. And we tormented teams underneath with linebackers versus running backs one-on-one and things like that. And I would think, especially this first year, that'll be DeAndre Swift's bread and butter, will be to come in the pass game, create a mismatch, take advantage of that, and make something happen after the catch.
Let me give you three more rookies who have impressed so far. And on the defensive side here, Chris, we got the Falcons – A.J. Terrell versus Julio Jones. Isn't there a video out there of him going up against Julio Jones and not getting dominated, which is like, you know, that's a victory in and of itself right there, actually making a play.
Yeah, no, and then there's a video from last weekend of him going up and getting an interception in practice. You know, to me, again, A.J. Terrell, yeah, you know I loved him coming out in the draft, but here's a guy that he's with the team, playing the Seattle scheme, you know, yeah, he's going to be asked to play man-to-man, which is what he did all the time at Clemson. But now he's going, wait, this three deep, you know, press bail zone coverage, man, this is pretty cool. This is a little easier than having to cover people man-to-man all the time. So, again, I think it's the perfect match of a guy's, like, you know, body type and skill set, fit the scheme, and then some. Where he's going to be able to, like, Atlanta for the first time in a while is going to be able to go, like, wait, you know, we're playing, we need somebody to match up with Michael Thomas on third and fourth this week. We can't play the Seattle scheme all the time because Drew Brees and Sean Payton have too many plays to where they know how to pick it apart. A.J. Terrell is going to be able to be that guy, which is going to be a nice curveball for that Atlanta defense. They haven't had that. Not that type of guy. So, yeah, and then we see Julio catch a ball on A.J. Terrell. And I go, oh, that's cool. Nice throw by Matt Ryan. I also go, I look at the whole thing and go, I like that coverage. I mean, that was damn good coverage on Julio Jones. Yeah, it was a perfect pass, and Julio's one of the greatest of all time. But I think that's only going to help him too. The fact that he'll get to guard Julio Jones every day in practice, right?
Man, that's like the weightlifter that throws on an extra 25 pounds to see if he can get it. And then when you take it off, you're like, oh, wow, this is super easy. I can do 175 like it's nothing.
You're exactly right. Yeah, he's gonna most receivers he's gonna play in football. He's gonna go, well, shit, this is easier than practice. So
yes,
I like this, and it is. It's gonna build confidence in his game.
So 16th overall pick for A.J. Terrell coming out of Clemson. You liked him a whole lot. We didn't talk a lot about the safety that the Patriots took with the 37th overall pick, Kyle Duggar, who I still have no idea where this college is. Do you remember the college that he went to?
Lenoir Rhyne, right? Lenoir Rhyne?
Lenoir Rhyne. Where is that?
I have no idea. None.
It might not exist. Like, honestly, if you told me, like, it's actually a made-up college and they created their own football player at a made-up college and Bill Belichick just – this is a robot playing for him, I would be like, that's actually a pretty good point. North Carolina, Pete says. Pete has chimed in with – that's in North Carolina. But so far, so good with Kyle Duggar and the New England Patriots.
Well, he's a freak. I mean, I'm not shocked. I'm not. You know, I think, you know, in the draft process – I believe I had Antoine Winfield Jr., Xavier McKinney, number two, and I believe I made Duggar my number three safety, even though, you know, it wasn't easy because you're going, man, who is he playing here? What is this team? Right. You know, is this Ahmed Faried he's tackling in space? Maybe. I don't know if that
– right. Been.
I'm not sure to give that a good grade or a bad grade. I don't know what to say there. I mean, it's easy to tackle that guy in space, but, you know.
I agree.
It was hard evaluations, but again, I think this is another one, almost like the Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like the perfect guy for the perfect scheme and everything that goes along with it. You know, again, Belichick loves these type, and this is a guy that I would think would take over a little bit of that Patrick Chung role. They're going to ask him to match up against the Kelseys of the world when it does. They play man-to-man, linebacker, strong safety. What is he doing on this play? Is he playing more of a strong safety? Is he going to get out of there? I mean, is he going to be playing more of a linebacker here? Or is he going to get out of here and drop into the traditional safety spot? All those things. I mean, I'm interested to see him when the bullets do go live, because he was a guy that was a specimen, it looked like. But, yeah, he was playing against lesser competition. Sounds like he's smart. That's the one thing I heard about him in this process. Which, if you got talent and smarts up in New England, that could be a damn good combo.
So you went Antoine Winfield Jr. is your number one. He went Xavier McKinney 2, Julian Blackman 3. Kyle Duggar was 4 for you, and he had Ashton Davis 5. So
gotcha.
Kyle Duggar 4.
Forgot
so your
Julian
number one
Blackman,
guy,
yeah.
Your number one guy, Antoine Winfield Jr., he dropped in the draft, right? He fell down a little bit, went farther down than we expected. But – Bruce Arians is liking that he did. He said, quote, he's an intelligent player. It's not too big for him. He'll be competing for a starting job quickly. So they think he's on the fast track there in Tampa.
Yeah, I would go more of like, I would be shocked if he is not starting in Tampa. You know, I really would. But like for Bruce Arians to say those type of things, you know, this early about a rookie, I think that just tells you how impressive he is. And plus, they have nothing other than what? Whitehead at safety, I think. That's anybody that's a proven NFL safety commodity. Other than him on the roster, everybody is like, you know, oh, yeah, he's played a little. This guy was on that team for a little. I just would be surprised if he doesn't get out there and get in that starting role. I really would be.
So we'll continue to monitor social media. Those are the rookies who have popped so far. From what we can tell, we've got to scour the internet. We're like investigative reporters now, Chris. That's the only way we get our information on these players.
And you know, the COVID-19 and the pandemic has totally screwed up my life of being able to get, you know, my coaching friends to text me as much or getting the, you know, phone call when they're on the way home from work or their day's ending. You know, I just think because of the battle of this every day of the moving parts and trying to catch up, I think the coaches are as stretched thin as they've ever been. That's one thing I've heard, like, man, we're grinding. So they're trying to make up for lost time. And you know, between us not being able to see any live action in preseason football, you know, I don't get to talk and hear little inklings or things that are, you know, guys that are jumping on the radar at training camp. And that's what's just absolutely driving me mad right now.
They're all out of the routine. I mean, they all want to be 100% football, but then you have this other thing that you can't ignore that takes a lot of your brain power and time and trying to figure out how to totally redo your practices. Yeah, I imagine that they're exhausted.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat. protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Chris, let's get some reaction real quick to your whiteboard play call with the Gruden plays. Don't ask me to go through them again here because I can't do it. I tried on the video. I was completely embarrassed. But if you haven't seen the video, Chris went up there. What's the play, Chris? It's X, stick, Y, looky, 382, scatter, shift, right, west, right, tight. What was it?
That we did Viper right, 382.
Yeah. Okay.
X stick looky, right?
See?
We did green, yes. Right, X, shift to Viper right, 382, X stick looky. And then we did scatter to west, right, tight, F, yes. Left, 372, Y stick, Z spot.
Yes, correct. You could have just said random letters and words there, and I still would have been like, yeah, I think that's what we did. But you went up there, you went on the whiteboard and drew it all out. It was like a half-hour video on YouTube.com. You can go check it out on the NBC Sports YouTube page. Rave reviews, Chris. People love to get inside your brain and learn a little bit from you. My parents watched it. My dad's a former football coach, loved every second of it. My mom fell asleep within the first minute and a half. So it's a very specific audience that will eat up this video, but I think a lot of the homies would love it. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out. Here's a comment from ATX Waffle Master. This absolutely needs to continue for this pod. Thanks for Reed and Chris Sims. And I intentionally mentioned Ahmed first. Yeah, I do feel like I was kind of the star in that video.
You were.
Chris.
You were the star.
Big time.
It was good. It's not sometimes somebody else looked like an idiot calling those plays other than me. So you were the star. You know, welcome. But I would love to do that. You know, and to the ATX Austin, Texas Waffle Master over there. Hey, I would hopefully we're together on a weekly basis inside of, you know, Central Park there at NBC Sports to where, you know, send in a play, somebody, send in a language of a word, whatever, and we'll try to break it down and do that, you know, and try to do some football talk on the board where we talk through some schemes and reads or play design or what the thought process is. I would love to do that.
Bab Sports says, don't be too hard on yourself, Ahmed. The Raiders still don't understand this offense either. So it's like, I'm not alone. At least I'm not alone in that respect. But this is a really good one from NFL Leeds. And I'm curious to hear what you're going to say about this. Chris, do you wish you were drafted by a coach who could have made your transition into the NFL simpler? Would you have developed quicker, better, and potentially had a more successful career? Is Gruden's system the most complex in the NFL? So that's interesting. I mean, you're coming in as a rookie and you're going right to the hardest system, most complicated, maybe wordiest system in the NFL. Do you think that impeded your progress at all as a rookie?
Well, yeah, it was a lot. It's a lot to learn. You know, I mean, Brad Johnson, who had been in the NFL a lot, you know, a long time, the year before that was his first year with John Gruden. They went to the Super Bowl, but I know that even for a guy like Brad Johnson, he didn't know the whole offense at that point either. Like, Gruden had to scale it back in year one, right? Just to make sure, hey, we can execute and do things. Just like we heard with Josh Jacobs last year. Like, yeah, we're just going to run the ball with him. This year, we'll break his brain into the pass game and see where he goes from there. So, no, like, I think I developed a lot. I learned a lot of football under John Gruden. I really did. Was his offense maybe, you know, too many words at times and things like that? Yes, certainly. There's no doubt about that. You know, even he knows that. You know,
but it's like we just said with AJ Terrell going against Julio Jones, right? You max out, max effort. You'll never have a system more complicated than this. You start with that, you're set for life.
Yeah, well, there is something to that. And the other big thing is, as a quarterback, you just want answers, all right? That's like the number one thing I learned throughout my career. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, quarterbacks are always like, hey, that's a cool play, coach. Hey, but what if the defense does this, right? Like, I know you told me to do this, but you said against this defense and that defense.
Right.
But, like, this team runs more than these two defenses. So what if they do this? And you'll find some coaches throughout the years who they don't have an answer, or just call it, or just run the play, and our O-line will sort it out or do things like that. No, the good offenses have answers for everything. And not to say that our answers were always the best, but we had answers, right? To where no matter what a defense did to me, Gruden had wired me to go, you know what to do against that. You know what to get to do against this. You know what to do against that. So I always felt comfortable from that standpoint, and that helped me develop. Do I think the offense, like, fit me and my skill set, like, perfectly? No, I do not. Not the least bit. I would have been more... You know, I wish I would have got to play in the Brady New England offense, or an offense like Big Ben Roethlisberger or something like that. You know, my bread and butter was, let me sit in the pocket and I'm going to have an aggressive frame of mind and I can push the ball down the field. And that's where I was best at. You know, I wasn't the best at, you know, Aaron Rodgers slant route 90 million miles per hour with the quickest release we ever saw in the sport and all those things. That was not my bread and butter. So, you know, I'm not going to complain about it. Do I think it was all perfect? No, but it was really damn awesome, and I learned a lot. I will say that.
Well, I learned a lot with that 30-minute video we did, so we will have to do that again with different offenses. So please send in an offensive play, even a play that you just saw that worked on TV from your team.
Right.
And Chris will diagram it and put words to the pictures, and we'll break it all down. Before we go, Chris, one more important thing we got to do here. We are back here at Central Park for the most part. I am only here today. We got all our friends, Ezekiel Elliott, Lamar Jackson, Nick Bosa, which is, I think that's a newer one. I don't remember having
it
that
is.
One here.
It's a new one.
But we need more. We need to fill up the desk, because I will not rest until this whole desk is filled up with bobbleheads. And so you tweeted out, or at least it was from your account, Chris. Now that I and Ahmed are back doing some pods at the desk, we need to know what's the bobblehead we should add next. And so we got so many suggestions for you and myself and Pete to get on, and Matt Casey to get on. Where does he get them normally? eBay? I think he gets a lot of them on eBay.
Something like that.
So here are the most random ones we got, Chris. We got someone suggested Joe Thomas, Martin Gramatica.
Wow.
That was out there. And there actually was a bobblehead. There was a picture. I remember that tweet. There was a picture of a Martin Gramatica bobblehead.
My teammate, old teammate.
Yep. Philip Rivers complaining to the refs. A bigger Matthew Stafford. Lester Hayes, because like him, you also cover everything. Chris in a Texas
I love it.
That's a good one, right? Chris in a Texas jersey. Chris holding his spleen. I don't know how you would even do that.
I guess, probably. Yeah. Have a picture of me holding a jar with my spleen in it. I don't know what you'd do there.
Dwight Schrute from The Office. I don't know if you're an Office fan, but there was a suggestion for that. Dr. Fauci, Mr. America. And finally, a Cowboys fan with a Cowboys cheerleader wedding cake topper. And there's a picture of it here. It looks like there is a Cowboys fan standing next to a Cowboys cheerleader as a wedding cake topper. So that could be an addition there. So those were the random ones, Chris. Do you like any of those?
I do. I like when the guy said the Lester Hayes, he covered everything like you do. Like, I love that. First of all, Lester Hayes probably be one of my favorite corners in the history of football. So,
really?
Yeah, I love him. And I would love maybe we like got some of the older players on there, right? Like the old legends. That might be neat to do. We don't need a bigger Matthew Stafford. What were some of the names you read right around Matthew Stafford there? There was one or two maybe before it or after it that I was like,
Philip Rivers complaining to the refs.
Oh, that's funny.
You in a Texas jersey, Martin Gramatica, Joe Thomas. No. But yeah, so Pete also compiled like his top 10. So his top 10 favorite names that were thrown out there by the homies of the bobbleheads that we need next. So here's number 10. Number 10 is Gardner Minshew, a player who, you know, you are not on the Gardner Minshew train like most other people up to this point. You don't, it's not like you dislike him, but you're just not there yet.
Yeah, no, I'm not there yet. I'm not, he's not bobblehead worthy yet. Sorry. Not there yet.
Number 9, Troy Polamalu. Bobble hair. That's a good one.
Yes. We know Pete loves his hair. We know that.
Number 8, Pat Tillman. Always strong there for a bobblehead.
Definitely.
Number 7, Jim Brown.
Oh, I like that. Guy. Yeah.
Number 6, you're going to like Lawrence Taylor. You mentioned the legends. I think you're right. I'm leaning more towards a legend at this point.
Yeah.
Even though I love the current players. Number 5, someone suggested Devontae Adams. Well, that's a throw out immediately.
Everybody's got jokes. Funny. Maybe we should just to like shut people up because I do like them.
You know, that's true, right?
You know, just not top 10 worthy. Sorry.
Change the narrative. Number 4 is another guy we got to throw out, Frank Gore, because you don't think he's a Hall of Famer and he doesn't like him for that.
Damn. People just killing me, huh? You're funny. Yeah. You're funny, Pete. I like
and
your
know
list,
your
Pete.
History. AJ Dillon already number 3 here, just for the solid lower half. Number 2, Mike Florio in a Vikings uniform. That would be pretty good.
That would be amazing.
And number 1, Ahmed Fareed. Yep. Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Pete. I don't know if he suggested that or maybe I just submitted myself there and got to number 1 on Pete's poll. But one of those is a favorite. I think I know where you would lean here. But real quick, the most popular guesses. So here are the 5. And Pete went through this. He said he was tabulating it like he was the U.S. for the census, like keeping score of who was mentioned the most. Let's see if you can guess the 5 people who were mentioned the most when the homies thought of a bobblehead that would be appropriate for the desk of Chris Sims that you don't already have. So throw some names out there.
Okay. How about Fletcher Cox? Did he make it on there?
No, he did not make the top 5.
What about Saquon? I mean, Saquon's a guy I think needs to be on there with that legs and ass. He's got to be on there.
Third most popular.
Okay. Aaron Donald not on there?
Aaron Donald not on there. Nope, he is not a part of the top 5. There's definitely a San Francisco tilt to the top 5.
Okay. So
Kristen, by the way, says hi. Kristen, by the way, says hi, Chris.
Hi,
she's
Kristen.
Walking through Central Park right now. You're the only one not here.
So we Kittle, and do we not have Jimmy G? I thought we had a Jimmy G, but Kittle and Jimmy G.
You
are
have
there?
A Jimmy G, so yeah,
right.
Kittle is a correct answer. He is the number 1 most popular new addition that the homies want on the desk. So George Kittle is 1, Saquon's 3, Kyle is 5.
Oh yeah, we probably that. You're right. Or maybe we should just get like the Shanahan hat and at least have that on the table or something like that. Just
would
have
he send
there.
One? Would he send us one of his hats? I would wear it, probably.
No, he better. He's long overdue. His wife used the pandemic excuse of why she couldn't go to FedEx or do any of that to send me my 49ers gear. And, you know, I mean, we've gotten to the point now where we can at least go to the, you know, FedEx or do something like that. So they got no excuse. They're slacking. The Shanahans are slacking all the way.
So 2 more that were in the top 5 most popular. Number 4, you should have guessed this one, Josh Allen.
Oh, I had him written down, too. There's no doubt. It's my boy, Boo.
I know. But the number 2 most popular behind George Kittle is a former player, former NFL player.
Give me more hints.
Played quarterback.
Phil Simms. Duh. I guess we should have that asshole on there since he's a weekly guest. I guess we should.
We should probably get one. Does he have a bobblehead of himself?
I don't know. I know I grew up with, you know, seeing some in the house. Like, I think I had one in my bedroom growing up. So they're certainly out there. There's no doubt. But yeah, we should be able to make that happen. You're right. We got to get something to pay tribute to Big Phil out there.
Yes. 100%. All right, Chris.
All right.
That does it.
You're done. You're all
imagine
done.
How much we would have to talk about if there were actual preseason games happening right now.
Oh, I know. I mean, we might be doing 2.5-hour podcasts. I don't know what the hell would happen. But no, good shit by you. Pete Demolitis is the man. I mean, he's always coming up with a lot of these topics and everything like that. So got to give him credit. But we'll be back Monday. You got anything going on? Anything fun this weekend?
I don't think so. I'm meeting my son's first grade teacher, I believe, on Saturday. So that's
okay. That's dad a life. Boring that's Saturday.
That's dad life.
Yeah. No. Yeah. My dad. Dad sends mom to do that one. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's
could
what
still
I do,
happen.
Really. Good. All right. We'll be back Monday. Hopefully, you're back in the fold with us, Chris Sims, Unbuttoned Podcast. Everybody, be safe this weekend. Have fun. I know I'm going to be doing a lot of retox. I know I'm going to get that started here later tonight. But peace out to everybody. Everybody be good. We'll talk to you next week. See you, Ahmed. Clap it up, baby.
Justin and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.